Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, it is the refreshing!
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. You can get in line with your questions, comments, or concerns. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. And give a call. We'll talk about everything from plant selection, what you need to do, the ups and downs and all arounds of your annuals, your bulbs, your edibles, your ground covers, houseplants, lawns, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, and water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, or opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Greg is producing today, so he will be the one who answers the phone. And he'll get your first name and where you're calling from. That's about all you need to do. And during the week, I do something called landscape consulting, which I have named years ago a walk and talk, where I come to your home. I answer the list of questions that you may have related to your landscape. Why is this happening? Why isn't this happening? Why is this so great? But right over here, it's not so great. All those kind of things. And then also, I keep my eyes open for things that may be impacting your landscape that you haven't even considered. So I share 40 plus years of experience as I walk around your yard with you. So a walk and talk. And the tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel, one of the things today is there is a Greek Fest at the Greek Community Center, which is on the South Outer 40 Road between Highway 270 and Mason. So there's all kinds of vendors there. There's all kinds of food there. There's all kinds of wine there. There's all kinds of everything there. So the tip of the trowel goes out to the Greek Fest, and that's at the Community Center, which is on Highway 40, South Outer Road, basically between, if you, you know, get off on Mason, you can get on the outer south road and just head down there and you'll see it. There's all kinds of great stuff going on. And also, November is Epilepsy Month. Epilepsy, well, why is that important to me? Well, I have epilepsy. Back a long time ago in 1998, I had an epileptic seizure on air. And many longtime listeners remember that. where I just freaked out. At that time, there was a co-host with me, Mr. Bill Reeker, and I just like zoomed out and had this seizure. I didn't even know I had epilepsy. I never had seizures before, but I was having petite seizures prior to that. And what I found out was I was taking some anti-allergic medication for my allergies, nose allergies, that kind of stuff. And then later on, they said, well, sometimes people taking this can get seizures. I didn't know that at the time, or I just figured that couldn't be me. But anyway, 1998, so next year, it'll be next February, it will be 20 years since I had my grand mal seizure. I sort of woke up when they stuck me in an ambulance and took me down to SLU. So now every year I go for my annual checkup with the neurology department at SLU and take the medication. So anyway, so November is Epilepsy Month. So there is an Epilepsy Foundation. I used to be part of the board of directors and everything else. I really got kind of lazy with a bunch of stuff, so I don't do that anymore, but so be it. And if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's see if we can get a call in before we go to break. Rich is across the river. Hi, Rich.
Actually, I'm surprisingly...
Rich, are you there?
Dropping. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Surprisingly, based on your last commercial, I'm actually stopping at St. Louis U to see my dad.
Oh, really?
Hey, I have a couple 12x12 raised gardens with a awesome tomato crop this year, and I'm wondering about crop rotation and or a good prep for next year.
Basically, get all those tomatoes out of there. So any dead, any of them that have been frosted, killed or anything, just get rid of those, get rid of the entire root system, because a lot of times tomatoes can be very prone to all kinds of different diseases. As you know, I don't know which varieties you grew, but in the future, when you select your variety of tomatoes, make sure it has like three initials after the name. And other than just turning the soil over, that's about all you have to do after you get the existing tomato plants out of there. That's really pretty much it. You can add an inch or two of compost in when you turn the soil over, and just leave it sort of sit through the entire wintertime.
How do you feel about aged horse manure compost?
Horse manure, I'm a little bit... If it's totally aged, that's fine. Horses only have one stomach. So sometimes seeds can pass through their stomach and come out. And even if it's aged, it may not be aged enough to get rid of the seeds. So you may be inoculating your bed space. I'm not saying you are, but it is something to certainly consider. Where cows have three different stomachs, and that's why cow manure is a little bit better for what you're talking about, because, the sort of the chemistry of the three different stomachs has a greater tendency to kill the weeds or any kind of seed. It doesn't have to be weed seeds. More so than a horse. But if you want to use it, sure, that's fine.
Yeah, but weeding is great therapy, so we all love that.
Mental therapy and physical.
That's right. Nobody bothers you while you're weeding. They
that's
leave you
very
alone.
True.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks, Rich. And Mike Miller, KM Morris Garden Hotline. We will be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Let's go to Joanne's house, and she lives in Staunton, Illinois. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is on hydrangeas. I planted two bushes 3 years ago. I'm trying so hard. I love those bushes, probably favorite. The green is healthy as can be. The leaves are healthy. The bushes look great. Last year, I don't think they had a bloom at all. This year, one bush had one bloom way down underneath almost where it couldn't even develop. And the other one had four, that pink variety.
Right.
They all came almost at the same time, early to midsummer. They're actually, those four are still on there. That's the only four that came. I don't know what I'm not doing or doing.
Basically, how big were these plants when you bought them?
Oh, just typical, like from the flower shop, probably 2 feet. in the pot at the tallest point.
Yeah, it may be age-wise as much as anything. So if you're seeing sort of an increase in the blooming, also don't do any pruning on them whatsoever, except in the springtime. Cut anything off, any stems that don't have any kind of foliage coming out on them, and just basically leave them alone. If they're in the right location and they got the right soil for them, then it's an age factor as much as anything. And don't prune. People really mess up the hydrangeas by pruning out of sequence, and that can really cause some major trouble related to flowering.
I don't think I did anything to them last fall.
So then
I don't think I did, because this spring there were all those dead-like sticks sticking up. And I thought part of the growth comes out of those sticks, but all my growth came out of the ground.
Well, this may be variety-wise, too. Some of the older kind of varieties that are the pinks and the blues, the sticks, don't survive the wintertime. We had a mild winter. So just, leave it alone. Don't do anything. Go to your favorite gardens.
Don't cut the frostbite off. Just leave them.
No, you can cut anything that doesn't come out with any leaves in the springtime. Cut those off, because aesthetically they're just problematic. But
not now, I mean. Oh. It's been frostbitten, so just leave it.
Leave
like
it. Yes. Leave everything as it is. And then in the springtime, go to your favorite garden center, tell them you have some hydrangeas, and see what kind of fertilizer they recommend that they have, in stock for hydrangeas.
Well, one did, I guess the beginning of last year, have me get this acid type.
Right.
Fertilizer, and I sprinkled that around the like where the root would be.
Okay.
So, I was unsure if I right now was supposed to take those down because the leaves are ruined from the frost, or let them sit.
Yeah, just leave them alone. They're going to look ugly, but that way maybe you can get these things kind of back in, or get them in
the
sequence.
The blooms that came were beautiful. They're big. It just got them at one time, didn't get any more.
Right. So. Well, some varieties of hydrangeas do that. Some of them are continuous bloomers, the newer hybrids, but the old-time ones only bloom once. That's it. There's no more for the rest of the year.
And they still would have sold those like 3 years ago?
Of course. They still sell them now.
Oh, okay. It's just a variety that's
right,
out there.
Right, exactly. Okay. So you have to make sure you get one that's a continuous bloomer, so it will keep re-blooming through the entire summertime.
Okay. Thank you so much. I got one other quick question. I have two knockout roses in pots, in big pots.
Mm-hmm.
Should that survive the winter like that, or do I need to take them in or get them into the ground?
Well, you can leave them in the pots. You maybe roll the dice. Who knows? I grow mine in pots, too. And last year, I put them in the garage. I pruned them back, put them in the garage, and they were spectacular. This year, I might leave... Since I have four, I might leave two of them out just to see what happens, and put two in the garage. And just, I have fairly large pots. They're about 18 inches to 20 inches across.
Yeah, mine are too. They're big.
So
the basement is actually warm because of furnace.
Oh.
Is it okay to put them in there? Or the garage is not even attached where I am, so it'd be as cold as outside.
Well, if you don't, that's okay. They want the cold. Just make sure you don't sit them on the floor. So get some, a plastic shelf or something like that to set them up off the floor, but definitely not in the basement.
Any water?
About once a month, go out there with a gallon of water.
Great. Okay, great. Those are two questions that I hadn't come across before and wasn't sure.
All right, great.
Okay, thank you so much for your help.
Sure, good luck with that. And now let's go to Anthony, and he's in Overland. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Good.
And for one thing, I'm one of the callers that was listening to you when you had your little episode. I never forget it. I'll never forget it. It seemed like you fell off your chair.
I did.
That's what I thought you did. I tell people that. I go, I remember the time. Anyway, but it's not a question, it's a comment. I had bought a Japanese red maple blood good. And, it wasn't a cheap one. It wasn't a $30 maple. It was a little expensive. It was a place, I don't want to say the name, because maybe you shouldn't do that. But it was a nice nursery. And I only had about 30 leaves on it at the time, but now I got about 200 dark ruby red leaves on it.
Right.
So I must have did something right.
Yes.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, absolutely. So, you sort of saved this plant from a bad destiny and made it like to be a champion.
Wow. Okay, I get the tip of the trowel, I think.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Sure. Yeah, you never know. I mean, a lot of people rescue plants that, you know, for me, I kind of look if I'm going to buy something. You know, rather than trying to rescue something, I don't do that. I just find something that I think is going to be more robust at the very beginning. But there's plenty of people that do save plants from bad destiny. So, in other words, the compost pile. Steve lives in Fenton. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you. Appreciate it, Mike. I've had an ongoing problem for years and years, really, ever since I've been in this house, and that is trying to establish a nice thick lawn. My lawn seems to always thin out over the year. By the fall, I've just got real thinned out grass. I've got grass, you know, pretty much everywhere, but it's very thin to where I can, you know, often see the ground in between the plants.
Right.
It's just I've done the reseeding in the fall and the fertilizing, and I just can't seem to solve this issue. Any thoughts on what could be, what could be causing that?
Probably it's heavy duty clay soil as much as anything.
It is. It definitely
is. And lawn does not grow on heavy duty clay soil. It just doesn't. There's no getting around it. It doesn't matter. Even K31, which is the toughest fescue, it doesn't have great success on heavy duty, clay soils. Start with a core aeration, where they come out with a machine, pull plugs out of the ground, follow that with a composting. You do that right as you're seeding. And do the best thing to do if you're going to... Now, first of all, also, do you have a bunch of trees in your yard?
I do have a lot of trees.
Well, you're never...
Probably too many, but I do have a lot of trees.
Yeah, so you're never going to... With the clay soils and the tree roots, you're never going to have a thick lawn. It's impossible.
Okay.
I mean, seriously. You can go to the botanical garden and walk underneath, the areas that are shaded, that are lawned. And you can look down, and it's not thick. And they core aerate twice a year. They overseed twice a year. At least that's what they used to do. And it's not thick. And especially at the end of the summertime, even if you've done everything just right, irrigation-wise and all that other stuff, it's just not going to happen.
Well, it seems to be pretty widely, even in areas that aren't heavily shaded, I have the same issue. And I have been aerating pretty regularly the last 6 or 7 years, but I haven't been doing the composting.
Yeah.
I just recently switched over to using Espoma products instead of the, commercial salt-based products, but right. I could go with the spreading the compost out.
Yeah, that will help. What that does, your soil feeds your plants, but still realize that if you have a lot of trees and tree roots go beyond the drip line, so it's furthest extension of the branches. So that's where the feeder roots are. So that's the battle zone.
So they're competing for all those nutrients.
Absolutely. And look at the size of a tree versus the size of a grass plant.
Yeah. Pretty not an even match, is it?
Right. It'd be like me, battling Hulk Hogan when he was younger, in the wrestling match. It just wouldn't, there was nothing I could do.
I've tried different varieties of fescue, and the supposedly drought-resistant types. So, how's in our area in that type of soil, bluegrass versus fescue? Is fescue still the best bet? Or?
Absolutely. I mean, bluegrass has a very, very difficult time. Fescue at least has a genetic history of being from this region with the K31. But forget the bluegrass and always do a blend. Don't do one type of variety.
I just started recently converting over to that philosophy. That makes sense. Okay. All right. How would I get a hold of you to have you come out and do your lawn walkthrough thing?
Basically, just go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my phone number and email address.
Okay. Is it M-I-L-L-E-R?
Yep.
Okay.
Mike Miller Designs with an S on the word designs.
Okay, great. Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Chris Kerber with you here, and it's a Saturday night hockey night in St. Louis tonight. The Blues at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Pre-game at 5:30. Face-off at 6 on your home for St. Louis Blues hockey, KMOX.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions or concerns about your yard, your landscape, or your house plants? Ooh, the guy that had, I think it was a ficus tree, I can't remember, but covered with scale. Ugh. Yes, he sprayed the dormant oil, but wipe all that scale off too, because you don't know, some of the scales on, you know, you could miss, and then it could be a female, lay the eggs, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Dan lives in Litchfield, Illinois. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Mike. I just, am I talking to you? I just took it off speaker.
Yeah, as far as I know, you are.
Oh, great. I can hear you just fine. Listen, the subject is redbud trees.
Aha.
My redbud tree last year, it's about been in the ground about 5 years, about 20 feet tall, did fine. The big rounded leaves and healthy crop of the beans.
Right.
This year, I tried to call you in the spring, but got tired of waiting one day. The leaves never got more than maybe 3 inches in diameter, and the leading edge of the leaf looked like it had died, and so that when the leaf did try to grow, it cupped a little, and the leaves never got bigger than, say, 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and the tree never looked healthy, but it's alive, and it made it through the summer. All the rest of the redbud trees in my neighborhood, about a three-block area, look very much the same. At first, I thought, maybe I had over-applied a broadleaf to try to knock back the violets in my lawn, and it had impacted the tree. But now this fall, I've been around, and almost every redbud tree in the neighborhood looks exactly the same. Is there some sort of a small, not really visible to the naked eye insect working on the leading edge of those leaves, or have you heard of this before?
I've not heard of it, but to me it sounds like weather, especially if everybody in your neighborhood, the red buds are doing the same thing. So just as the buds were coming out with the foliage, you had a, you know, just a cold snap, you know, and it could,
yep.
And that's probably what happened more so than related insects or anything else. Redbuds are fairly insect-free. And if there was an insect problem that affected that many redbuds, I don't know how many are in the three-block area of your neighborhood.
Well, we're talking a dozen.
Yeah, so that's the chance of that happening all at once is minimal. But so that, to me, sort of indicates it was just related to weather, cold snap, one night or whatever, and that was it.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging. We'll hang in there and see what happens next spring, and I won't worry too much. I'll have to, if I don't hit the violets, I'll have a violet lawn. So I'll hit them again. Okay, enjoy your show, and thanks for grabbing my call.
Sure, you know, you could just take the philosophy of my father, anything that is green is lawn. So we had violets, we had spring beauties, we had all kinds of stuff in our lawn, but he didn't really care. So thanks, Dan, and now let's go to Frank. Frank, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Mike, I got these flower pots with, I grew over the summer geraniums in them. Each uh-huh. pot held about 4 or 5 geraniums. Now I'm wondering, can I take those out and put tulip bulbs and crocus bulbs in there and keep them outside?
That's what I'm doing. I've already done about half my pots, and when the show's over today, I'm headed home. I'm going to take down all the Halloween decorations. We left them on for, you know, an extra few days. Cut down the moonflower vines, which got, you know, snapped by the cold. But then I'm going to, you know, continue to fill my pots up with tulip bulbs and daffodil bulbs. So as long as the pots are big enough, make sure you don't put the bulb right next to the edge of the pot. But I've had great success growing bulbs in pots for years. I even do some in window boxes as well, you know, besides the larger pots, too.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Yep. Just make sure the potting mix you use is well-drained, you know, and once you get them planted, if you're doing daffodils, you want them down about 6 or 7 inches. Tulips, you want down about 4 to 5. And crocus, you want down about 1 to 2.
Gotcha.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Certainly. And now let's go to Jim. And Jim is in St. Louis. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how we doing?
Good.
So I don't know if it's your area of expertise. I got a bunch of carnivorous plants that I've been growing inside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to make an outdoor garden. I just don't know climate and whether or not these animals are going to get to it. And if it will survive outside, should I wait till after they're done with the dormancy?
So you're talking about carnivorous plants.
Correct.
Like Venus flytraps and all that kind of stuff?
I got a bunch of flytraps, some pinchers, I got some sundews.
Yeah.
It's kind of a mix from all over the world, and I'm not sure how they do here in Missouri.
Well, if you put them outside, they'll be dead.
They would be.
Yep, it's too cold.
That was my thought. Okay, I know they can handle a light freeze, but
right.
All winter. So would they be okay wildlife in the spring and summer?
They should be. Yeah, because, I mean, they don't offer that much. I mean, they're generally all small, unless you're talking about a Little Shop of Horrors, Audrey, feed me, feed me, you know, giant thing like that. But they're not really that. So, yeah, I mean, that's not to say something might not chew on them, but I can't see them being drawn to that.
Okay, great. But probably not a good idea to have a whole outdoor garden.
Right. Right.
That was my fear. But I really love to see my side, but just climbing won't do it.
Yeah, just, I mean, I used to grow carnivorous plants too, but I grew them in pots and just, you know, set them out in the summer and then brought them in the wintertime. And then I don't want to say I got bored with it, but that's basically, I grow stuff for a period of time and then all of a sudden I just go, that's, you know, there's too many things to, you know, play with. So I started playing with something else.
All right. Well, great. Appreciate it. Love your show, by the way.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on your show. And Ken lives in Albers, Illinois. Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm good, Mike.
Great.
They have three questions. Hibiscus. I got two potted hibiscus plants that I just got this year. I'm assuming they have to come in for the winter.
There are hardy varieties of hibiscus, like the Disco Belle, Disco Queen. They're the ones that have huge flowers on them, about 6 or 8 inches across. Now, if this is a, you know, the more or less a tropical type that looks like a stalk and a tree, you know, more or less a tree, then yes, they do have to come inside.
Yes, one of them is a tree. It's kind of got the intertangled.
The twisted trunk.
Right.
Yeah, that's got to come in.
That one has to come in.
Yeah. Okay,
the other one actually is a smaller version, something you get maybe from a nursery or something. You know, we got it for a funeral. After the funeral, we got that as a gift, and it's a smaller one, so I'm assuming that has to come in as well.
Yes. So if the flowers were only, you know, if it did flower and the flowers only like, let's say, 2 to 3 inches across, those are tropical types. Those have to come in.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably the size of those flowers. Okay. Second question, the clematis. I have one that's in a pretty big size pot, like almost like a wine barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And then one I planted in the ground. So I'm assuming the one in the ground stays and you don't have to do anything with it.
Right, and the one that's in the probably the whiskey barrel, you don't have to do anything with that either. It should be fine.
They'll both come back. Okay, good. So those are both new this year for
right.
me. So third question is, I have a weeping, I think it's a flowering cherry. It's been in the ground for about 10 years or so. It's up against the house, you know, all the limbs and stuff, and I'm wanting to cut it.
Right.
Yeah, and it's about 12 to 16 inches in diameter. I'm assuming that I have to basically take the whole thing down. There's no reason to cut it off at where branches off and let it regrow from there.
Or, you know, it's a grafted thing, so there's three different things. The root system and the trunk are separate from the, let's say, the weeping part of the branching. And if, you know, if it's that close to the house, that was a bad choice on whoever planted it that close. Yeah, you might as well just take it down because it's just going to cause, you know, problems in your gutters and everything else for a long period of time.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate your help.
Well, thank you. And I think Albers is where Home Nursery, you know, has their big greenhouse system. So that's kind of a great horticultural area. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we got about 9 minutes to go. At 10 o'clock, Investing Sense with Bob Richards and Andy Smith. 11 o'clock, the KMOX Home Improvement Show with Scott Mosby. 1 o'clock, the Rick Edelman Show. 3 o'clock, the Business, the Family Business with Ryan Recker. And then 4 o'clock, the KMOX Auto Show with Greg Damon. Then the Blues are after that. Let's go to Roy, and Roy lives in Manchester. Hi, Roy.
Good morning. I plant annuals in containers with a potting mix. Is it okay to save that from year to year, or should I use new mix at the beginning of the year?
To me, I've used the same potting mix year after year after year. Unless I've grown something in a pot with this potting mix where it's been diseased, I get rid of that. But I don't understand this whole philosophy of getting rid of it year after year after year. Now, what I do is, you know, I dump it and store it in like Rubbermaid tubs in the wintertime. You don't necessarily have to do that, but I probably add about 20% new stuff each year with the existing stuff. And I, you know, I have had stuff for a long, long time, so I don't quite understand throwing it away every year. To me, that just doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, so just reuse it, because if it's potting mix, it's well-drained, you're going to have to be fertilizing whatever you're growing in it and anything else, so it just doesn't make any sense to throw it away. So thanks, Roy, and now let's go. Jeanette from South St. Louis. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about my compost pile. I have a small compost pile, and this year I have lots of roly-poly bugs in it. I'd like to know if this is harmful, and if so, what might have caused this, and how can I get rid of them?
Probably you maybe threw like some vegetables and all that kind of stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably why the roly-polies are there. But they're everywhere anyway. They don't really do all that much damage. They mainly consume dead stuff. So in other words, if you use this compost in the ground with other things, they're not going to eat the plants that are alive that you're trying to grow.
Okay, so don't worry about them.
No. I mean, okay. They're kind of, you know, they're a little bit, you know, icky.
They're creepy, right?
Right, but the worst than that would be slugs and snails. I mean, you talk about really creepy.
But, yeah, this is roly-poly, yeah, very definitely. So, okay, thank you.
No big deal, yep. And now let's go to Paul in Wildwood. Hi, Paul.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, Mike, I've got a 35-year-old pin oak that began dropping its leaves in, like, July or August of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And a tree service was out. They recommended fertilizing. And I'm just wondering what my next best step is. Should I have an arborist out? Should I go ahead with the fertilizing? Should I wait till next spring to see what happens?
Well, probably at least this year. I don't know about the fertilizing. I don't know what kind of fertilizer they're using. But I would do something or have a tree service do something called deep root feeding. So in other words, they're going to go about halfway out from the trunk to the end of the branches. Then they're going to have an auger drill bit and auger holes about 6 or 8 inches, you know, deep and about 2 feet apart, and do a concentric circle. Then go out another foot. So to me, it sounds like, you know, the sort of the soil is not really conducive to the overall health of your tree. So you're feeding the soil by doing that. So after you auger these holes, then you backfill those holes with compost.
Okay.
And the fertilizer is more cosmetic. I like fertilizer. I use a lot of fertilizers. But if your growing medium, whether it's soil in the ground or in pots or whatever it happens to be, if it's not good, adequate, the fertilizing sometimes doesn't make, you know, it doesn't compensate for that. So it's kind of like, you know, putting grease in your hair. You can change your hair to a certain point, but you're not putting, you know, you're not doing anything for the overall health of it. And that's why feeding the soil is always primary for me, whether it's potting mix or soil in the ground.
Okay, very good. I'll proceed with that then.
Great. Good luck with that. And there's nothing wrong with fertilizing, but that's, you know, that's secondary to getting a good, healthy soil. Carrie, how are you today?
Hi, thanks. I am looking to transplant some black-eyed Susans. Is it best to do it in the spring or in the fall?
If you get it done pretty quickly, you can still do it now. But we're kind of getting near the end of the time to do it because you want to get them acclimated. So in other words, the root system reestablished before it gets too severely cold. Because what happens is newly planted things, whether it's out of a pot or transplanted, we're going to have this freeze-thaw circumstance. And what this freezing and thawing, so in other words, cold, then warm, then cold, then warm, it can heave plants up out of the ground and prevent the root systems from getting established, the root hairs and everything else, and that can impact how healthy they're going to be for the wintertime, consequently, what they're going to do the following year.
Okay.
So you can do it, or you can wait until next spring. It's up to you.
It wouldn't be actually spring, though, because you can't even see the plants in spring.
Well, you can mark where they are.
Oh, good. That's good thought. Okay. I'll do that. Have a good day.
Yeah. I mean, even with just a popsicle stick or something. But like, let's say something like purple coneflower, they are evergreen, so the foliage stays above the ground all winter long, so they're easy to do. So get rid of those black-eyed Susan, get purple. No, just use popsicle sticks.
I have both, actually.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep, and Ted's going to be our last caller of the day. Ted, how are you today?
Well, pretty good, Roger. Mike, I'm trying to call in regard to, I got a spot up around Pierre Marquette Park, and we just noticed we got areas around the home is starting to, it's kind of vegetated with like a wood growth, but we come up with some great big mushrooms about the size of small basketballs. And there's two or three of them here, and then about 6 or 8 feet away, there's two or three more. And it's quite kind of shocked us. We don't know what they are. I was just curious if you could tell me what's happening here.
Basically, what you're describing sounds like a puffball. So it is a type of fungus mushroom, but all regardless of what type it is, they only grow on dead stuff. So there's dead roots there. Why the puffballs are growing there and not morel mushrooms or whatever else it happens to be, it's just the soil chemistry and all that other stuff. But usually with these puffballs also, if you step, because we had some, I grew up in West County and there was puffballs around. We love to kick them because it's sort of like the spores would be this dust stuff. But it doesn't really, you know, if the spores land in some other place and there's not something dead for them to grow on, then they're not going to, you know, be problematic. So you've got, you know, this circumstance sounds like puffballs. Look on the internet to see if it is puffballs. But it's just because there's dead root systems or dead whatever underneath the ground, and that's what they're growing off of. And they're not going to affect any kind of living plant root systems or any kind of living plants at all.
Okay, appreciate the information. It kind of gives me a little bit to go on.
So, just P-U-F-F. Just look at puffballs on the internet. See if I got it right. Or just take a picture of it and take it to your favorite garden center, you know, okay, and find out for sure. Yeah, Pierre Marquette, that's a great park for sure. I mean,
around the edge of it, right?
Yeah. So.
Okay. Super. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Don't worry about it. Just take it easy. And for everybody else, this, as I said earlier in the show, this is a time to make sure that you keep everything cleaned up and minimize the potential for any kind of diseases, insects, and stuff like that. And definitely do not let the leaf debris build up. Keep cutting your grass, leaf debris on long-bladed grasses. That's just, you know, you're asking for a fungus problem. So don't do it. And because we've got bad enough circumstances related to fungus here anyway, so do everything you can physically do. And be sure and take time to enjoy the color. This has been spectacular. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. See you next week.
A proud partner of the 2018 100th PGA Championship at Belle Reve Country Club.
KMOX, KMOX HD, St. Louis. KZK HD3, St. Louis.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Is health insurance eating up your budget for 2026? If you're looking for ways to better steward your finances, consider this. Christian Healthcare Ministries is a health insurance alternative at half the cost. As a ministry, CHM allows you to share the burden of medical bills with other believers. Join CHM today by visiting chministries.org/solution. That's chministries.org/solution.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Identity Refreshing!
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.